And welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News, and I co-host the Down the Stretch radio show on Saturdays on Sirius XM with Dave Johnson.
Hope y'all are all doing well. I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports. I didn't want to bother Lucy, but I see Doodle.
Hi, Doodle.
Doodle's here. He's made a little entrance to a cabin with First Racing and XBTV, and Doodle's looking old and he's a bit smelly, so I'm probably going to put him down in just a moment. But he wanted to say hi.
How old is he, Zoe?
He's 15.
Oh, good boy. 16. Good old guy. How about that? All right. So plenty to talk about in this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room. And let's go right to the races run over the weekend. And I thought we would start with the Florida Derby, since that was the story of the weekend. With all that was going on in Arkansas and Dubai, fierceness. Most people said the same things. We don't know what to expect from this horse. And even if you think the good fierceness was going to show up, which it did anybody think he's going to win by 13 and a half lengths, get a 110 buyer? Randy, to me, it was one of the most impressive performances. I know he got a good trip, definitely got an easy trip. But nonetheless, 13 and a half, a very impressive performance, and clearly the favorite in the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, yeah. He got an easy trip, but horses with tactical speed are supposed to make their own trips, right? That's what he did in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. You know, less people believe that, you know, he needs a clear lead to run like that. In the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he sat right outside a Chad Brown horse stalking second, and Muth ran up to him at the quarter pole on the outside, and he left Muth for dead and, you know, drew off and won by five lengths and change. So, you know, he can do it either way. What struck me is in the lead up to the race, talking to Todd Pletcher and talking to Mike Rapole, but Pletcher specifically, you know, I asked him, out of all the good horses you've trained in your career, 3-year-old and otherwise, if all you had to go on was what you see in their morning training, where would you put fierceness in that whole realm of all your good horses? And he said in the top 1%.
Wow.
The horse has been amazing in the mornings. And that's why, you know, it was so mystifying that he seemed to just check himself out whenever he got into some early trouble, like he did in the Champagne and he did in the Holy Bull. And I'm not trying to minimize the trouble that he got into in those races, which was, you know, fairly substantial, especially in the Holy Bull. But this was the same fierceness that they've been seeing in the morning. And if you go back on XBTV and you look at workouts like Zoe does, you can go back and watch a workout that fierceness had before the Florida Derby against a horse called Tuscan Sky, who's I think he's 2 for 2. And he's probably going to run in the Bluegrass Stakes, obviously trained by Pletcher. And, you know, they went side by side at Palm Beach Downs for the workout, as most of their horses do. And then on a gallop out, they asked them both to run. And fierceness left Tuscan Sky behind like he was tied to the rail. It was amazing. And they were actually kind of niggling on Tuscan Sky to try to get him to keep up. And, I mean, fierceness just disappeared into the sunset. So, yeah, I mean, that was the fierceness that we saw at the Breeders' Cup. A little bit more mature, a little bit older. And if he shows up in the Kentucky Derby, that's the same fierceness that they're going to see sort of disappearing into the horizon down the lane.
What was the buyer he got, Randy?
110, which could have been 111, 112, 113. It was fast.
Wow. He was fabulous. I mean, every quarter he got like sub 24 middle quarters and was geared down in the end. His only problem is he can't seem to overcome adversity. And maybe it's just something that he needs to work through and grow up through. But you are correct. If the real fierceness shows up on the first Saturday in May, that's not going to beat him. Absolutely not. I mean, he's absolutely brilliant. You know, I mean, you could call him a morning glory, but he's managed to have several races in the afternoon that have substantiated that. So I thought it was fantastic. Maybe Rapoli's going to quit buying horses from the sales, because this is another homebred for Rapoli. He's doing a very good job in his breeding operation thus far.
So Zoe, let me follow that up and get your opinion on this. And, you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because I mean, how could you not like this horse? How could you not be impressed with him? But in a 20 horse race in the Derby, he's probably going to get knocked around at some point. I mean, that happens to almost every horse in the Derby. He's not going to get an uncontested lead, and he's not going to get to the half in 47-2 like he did in Florida. Does the bad fierceness show up in the Derby if he has something less than a perfect trip?
The good fierceness will be tested, and we will see just exactly what his mettle is. Because one thing we know about Johnny V is that he can get one out of the gate, and come hell or high water, he'll get that horse out of trouble. Because I think he honestly learned a little bit riding for Bob the last few years, especially like shipping to Arkansas, and Bob will want his horses on the lead. And you're going to go. I don't care if they come over you, over on you at the beginning of the race. You're going to eke your way through there and get that horse the best kind of trip you can get. So how fast is he going to have to go to get that kind of trip that he needs? I don't know. It will be a severe test for him. And he is going to be draw dependent. I hate to say it. He's going to need a super comfy draw as well. But perhaps he's just grown up. I don't know.
Randy, I want to ask you to pose the same question to you.
Yeah. Well, look, the beauty of horse racing and the challenge of horse racing is the vast majority of circumstances, you've always got to prove yourself all over again the next time they run. There are always questions. And if there aren't questions, people are going to find questions, right? So with fierceness, I mean, the question before the Florida Derby was, you know, look what happened to him in the Holy Bull. Which fierceness are we going to see? And so we saw the fierceness that we saw at the Breeders' Cup. And even though he's going to be the favorite in Kentucky, the question in Kentucky is going to be, well, what happens if he has some adversity? And if he doesn't have adversity, and he wins the Kentucky Derby by 6 or 7 at the Preakness, same question. What if he gets bumped at the start? What if he has adversity, right? Until he does that, until he gets adversity and he's able to overcome it, that's always going to be a question that's going to be in the back of the minds of horse players and you know, observers and analysts. As far as the pace goes, he doesn't have to have the lead. We saw that in the Breeders' Cup. And the Breeders' Cup was a pretty fast-paced race. And he was right up there with it and then managed to kick on nicely through the lane. So unless it's just one of these, you know, suicidal Kentucky Derby paces like we've seen in the past, I think this horse is good enough to go at a pretty fast clip and then continue on and run his race.
The disappointments in the race, Conquest Warrior was 4th, Hades, the winner of the Holy Bull, was 5th. Won't be seeing either one of them in the Derby. 2 long shots were 2nd and 3rd, Catalytic and Grand Mo the 1st. Earlier on the card, the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and the race was won by Power Squeeze, obviously a horse that I think people took too lightly. It was her, she had won 2 stakes coming in, didn't have great numbers, and she goes and wins this race at 11-1. The horse that ran 2nd, Ways and Means, Randy, I think I know where you're going to go with this, because I would say the same thing. I think he ran a huge race. Right. Excuse me, she ran a huge race. I talked to Chad Brown about it. I said, are you going to go in the Oaks? He says, I sure want to. I hope I have enough points to get in. But considering the trip she had and the layoff and everything that she was trying to accomplish, even though she didn't win the Gulfstream Park Oaks, I could certainly see her winning the Kentucky Oaks.
Oh, you would have to think she would move forward off of that race. She looks like she just ran out of gas the last 16th of a mile or so. I mean, you know, nothing against Power Squeeze, who's now won 4 races in a row. It was a pretty fast race. But I mean, look, I mean, I think that coming off that long layoff like that, what, a 7-month layoff or something like that, that she should, Ways and Means should show a lot of improvement in the. Now, is she going to get in? The last 2 years, it took 48 last year and 50 points the year before to get into the starting field for the Kentucky Oaks, and finishing 2nd, she obviously has 50 points. So it puts her sort of like right on the cusp. The good news for her is that when the Santa Anita Oaks is run, Baffert is going to have Kenza in there, and she's going to be 1-5. And that's going to take care of a 100-point horse probably right there if she wins the Santa Anita Oaks. So you would have to think that would work in Ways and Means' favor.
Yeah, I was just about to jump on that, Randy. I mean, take nothing away from the winner. She's won 4 of 6. She's a really good filly. We'll test her mettle in the Kentucky Oaks. But my goodness, Ways and Means, how much the best was she? I don't honestly know how she didn't go down going into the first turn. I think Arad wanted to get her out of trouble on the backside and made a ridiculously early move on her. And I don't know how she overcame that trouble and didn't go down going into the first turn. It was well documented. The time off, they took a little chip out of an ankle. She came out of the spin away after clipping heels with that. It was Arad's first time aboard her. And she's the real deal. And she's been the real deal from day one. I've been a big fan of hers. I believe that she will be the best filly in the Kentucky Oaks. I really do.
Wow. Big statement there from Zoe Gadman.
Do want to remind you that the TDN is brought to you each and every week by Keeneland. Now, spring is here. It's nice and sunny out here in Southern California, and it'll probably be nice and sunny there at Keeneland. It's opening week at Keeneland. This Friday is opening day for the Keeneland Spring Meeting, which runs until April 26th, which is also the date of the April selected Horses of Racing Age sale. Later in today's podcast, we'll talk to Dr. Stuart Brown, Keeneland's Vice President of Equine Safety, and he'll talk about the safety measures being taken for the spring meet at Keeneland. And I also grill him about the Graham test. You'll have to listen into that. We'll be right back after these messages from Keeneland.
When the spring meet ends, summer success begins. Buy, sell, fresh winners, hot prospects. One night, one chance. Finish strong. Don't miss out. The Keeneland April Selected Horses of Racing Age sale, Friday, April 26th.
This week, the fastest horse of the week is brought to you by Constitution, one of those fast sires at One Star Farm. Constitution is the sire of our newest TDN Rising Star, 3-year-old colt Mind Frame, who romped to a 13 3/4 length debut victory Saturday on the Florida Derby undercard for owners Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola and trainer Todd Pletcher. Mind Frame's buyer speed figure of 103 was the fastest debut figure since the 104 by Speedboat Beach at Del Mar in September of 2022. So far this year, horses by Constitution have more 100-plus buyer speed figures than any sire in Kentucky, including that 100 debut buyer earned by Speakeasy back in the winter at Gulfstream Park. Constitution stands for $110,000 at One Star Farm. As for the fastest horse of the week, no surprise. We've already talked about him at length. It's Fierceness, of course, with that 110 buyer. How about a fastest horse of the week, Rabbit Hole, buyer speed, your trivia question, all right? The last Kentucky Derby starter with a buyer speed figure of 110 or higher on his past performances. You can think about it if you're interested, and I'll have the answer for you at the end of the podcast. How about that?
Okay. You stumped me on that one, Randy, but excellent rabbit hole diversion as well. So, all right. So let's head to Arkansas, where the big story, of course, was the Arkansas Derby. And you know what? There's not a whole lot to say about this because we're trying to focus in on the Kentucky Derby. Muth Wins for Baffert is not going to be in the Kentucky Derby. I've voiced this before, and I'll just say it one more time because it deserves to be said again. This is stupid. What Churchill Downs just did by extending his ban, the Baffert ban, into 2024, all it's done is to dilute the field for the Kentucky Derby and also the Kentucky Oaks, as Randy mentioned earlier. Kinza could be the best filly in the country by a mile, and she won't be in the Kentucky Oaks. I assume Baffert didn't say much afterwards about what direction he was going to go, but you would have to assume that he'll be back in the Preakness with Muth. And how about old Dwayne Lucas? Just Steele is second. He's on his way to the Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. Lucas has not had a horse in the Kentucky Derby since 2008. I just wrote this down. I think it's 2018. Randy, you must know that. Am I right about that, 2018?
I did not look it up, Bill. I apologize. Okay.
Zoe, you can start your take on the situation and the Muth victory.
Well, I mean, it's up to Churchill Downs. There's nothing we can say or do about it. Baffert tried his best and that didn't happen. But Muth, hey, you know what? I really like the raise from Muth. Obviously, he's had a big following all along. He was a $2 million purchase. But the one thing that I noticed from Muth this time was he was allowed to relax off the pace. Now, he sent him forward to begin with. That didn't work. He got a nice, comfy spot in between horses and just tracked the pace. We saw Timberlake make perhaps an early move because Pratt knew he had to beat Muth. Timberlake faltered. I believe he was fourth, I think. But Muth was much the best in there, and he showed the ability to come from off the pace, which in my mind means that you can be a really good horse, because I hate these one-dimensional horses that have to have the lead and have to have everything their own way. I loved the race by Muth. I really did.
Let me just jump in real quick, Randy. I was right. 2018, last Wayne Lucas starter. His last win, 1999 with Charismatic. So 6 years off from the Derby, and looks like Wayne will be front and center at Churchill Downs Derby week.
You beat me to it. I just looked it up also. Bravazo, sixth place finish in 2018. Okay, so we know about Muth. He's a really nice horse. He was obviously much the best. Let's talk about the three horses that were behind him. First of all, Timberlake, the even money favorite. If you go back and watch Timberlake as a two-year-old, one of his problems, which was a concern going forward with Timberlake about his ability to get a distance of ground, was that he was very eager, very over-aggressive, tended to be a little bit keen, right? That's why they loved his race in the Rebels so much, because he set behind horses on the first turn going into the back stretch, was a lot more patient than he had been in the past, waited for the cues of the rider. They steered him to the outside. Here he comes. He wins nicely against an easier field, but he did it the right way. He kind of reverted, I thought, in the Arkansas Derby. He was behind horses going in to the back stretch, and I think he got a little too aggressive and, you know, bowled his way through between horses and opened up early. I think he expended a little too much energy in the early part of the race, more than they wanted him to, and I think that's one of the explanations for his six-length defeat. Again, he was in against tougher competition, but I think he ran two or three lengths worse in the Arkansas Derby than he did in the Rebel. I think that's the reason why, and it does not bode well for a mile and a quarter in a 20-horse field with 150,000 people at Churchill Downs to try to get him to relax. Okay, Just Steel, a little bit wide on the first turn, a little bit wide on the second turn. Muth left him behind at the quarter pole, but Just Steel opened up through the lane on Timberlake and also Mystic Dan, who finished right next to Timberlake. They were third and fourth, respectively. Mystic Dan had a rail trip on a fast rail, winning the Southwest Stakes. He obviously had no track bias in his favor in the Arkansas Derby. He was also outside on both turns, and I think we saw the same Mystic Dan that we're probably likely to see in the Kentucky Derby if he goes at 25 or 30 to 1 in that particular race. But Muth, obviously, tons the best.
Zoe?
That's it. I mean, Muth.
All right. The Fantasy Stakes won by the Ken McPeak-trained Thor Pito Anna. She looks good going into the Kentucky Derby. But why don't we now go to Dubai and cover those races? And the Dubai World Cup, my goodness, what the hell was Laurel River? Wow. Matter of fact, some people have said that this was the most impressive Dubai World Cup they've ever seen. When you have to remember, you're talking about Arrogate in his great performance in the Dubai World Cup. So the Zoe, I'm sure, remembers this horse from being in Southern California. He won the Pat O'Brien Stakes in 2022 for Bob Baffert. Took a ton of time off. They brought him back. They gave him to a new trainer. They brought him back. And then he comes into this and just obliterates the field by 8.5 lengths. Now, here's the rest of the story. When I read that they may not run again till the Saudi Cup next year, my head exploded. That's what we're doing now? We're going to run a horse once a year, twice a year? Send him to Bill Mott or Brad Cox, and let's see what he can do in America. Come on, guys. Judd Monteen, let's see it.
Oh, I think those are the races they're pointing for. Like, I believe he's going to run in between now and then. In fact, Bupat Sima, who's a former assistant to Bob Baffert out here for a number of years, they're still very close, was on the Nick Luck podcast, and they posed to him the same question. You know, do you think you'll bring him stateside for, you know, the Mid-Derby, the Travers, everything else that we have over here. And he's like, well, I don't know. He's already been over there, and there's a reason that he got sent to him. He's only run 10 times. He's won 6 of them. He had a little bit of time off, and Garrett O'Rourke called him and said, hey, we're going to send you this horse, Laurel River. His initial start in Dubai was not good whatsoever, but he bounced back terrifically. And he was very, very impressive. Now, I know that Bob ran him in the Pat O'Brien and he ran him sprinting just because he was so terrifically fast. But he's got speed and he can carry it. He's out of an Empire mare. A lot of that family is long distance in that family. I'm sure Randy's already been down the rabbit hole. I didn't look into it because I was wondering if Randy had like looked into the pedigree. But there is distance in there. And the main races that they want to point to are next year's big money races. Now, if you know anything about Bupert Seymour, you might have heard of a horse called Switzerland, who basically ran 6 years in a row in the sprint race in Dubai and ran till he was 11 years old, purely for the fact that they point to their carnival, the Dubai Racing Carnival over there. This is the off season for them. They don't race in the heat of the summer in Dubai. So if you want to keep your horses running longer, this horse is 6 years old. He's lightly raced. I can totally see why he wants to point to those big races at the height of their carnival, Saudi, Dubai, and make a ton of money over there.
I guess if you only run him 2 or 3 times a year, but a couple of those races are worth $20 million in 12 months, you can make a little bit more of a case for doing something like that. I didn't go down the rabbit hole for Laurel River about pedigree because I'm familiar with the horse from when Bob Baffert had him. Sprinting at Santa Anita, he ran a 108 buyer speed figure and looked fantastic. And Bob was absolutely convinced that the horse was a distance horse. He was not a sprinter. He told me at the time, he's going to be better at a distance of ground. And he wanted to run him at that time. He wanted to point him for the Breeders' Cup Classic. And then something happened. Something called Flightline happened in Southern California. So Bob said, well, instead of running him against Flightline in the Pacific Classic, I'll just point him for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile and no one will beat him. And then he got hurt and couldn't make the Breeders' Cup. And then they sold him to Bupert Seymour's people. And now we see what the result is. But
well, Jubmont still owns him. Jubmont still owns him.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, we've seen now what Baffert saw back then, that he thought the horse would be even better at a distance of ground than he is sprinting, and Jubmont's got another good one. So you talk about the best Dubai World Cups that you've seen. This is third best for me. Number one would be Jubmont, right, with Arrogate. To me, number two is Dubai Millennium, back when he won the Dubai World Cup, which was just a spectacular performance. And then I would put Laurel River number three. We don't do official buyer speed figures for Dubai. We think we've got a pretty good line on what the number probably should be. And we made an educated guess that Laurel River ran about a 116 in the Dubai World Cup. Fantastic performance.
Earlier on the card, the UAE Derby, the Japanese win it for the third straight year. Forever Young also wins the Saudi Derby. He'll be coming to Churchill Downs with a perfect 5-for-5 record. Randy, I watched the CNBC broadcast of the Florida Derby, and you commented about the UAE Derby. You were such a big Derma Sotagaki fan, and I think either Jerry Bailey or someone else on the show asked you, is this horse look as strong as Derma Sotagaki did last year? And you flat out said no. So, what is the difference in this horse that you're not as enthusiastic as you were about last year's Japanese winner of the Dubai World Cup? The UAE Derby.
One word, fierceness.
Okay.
Right now, I have Forever Young second in my Derby pecking order behind Fierceness. Again, I don't want to get, I don't want to overdose people on numbers. I think I've said that in the past. But you can look, if you're handicapping, you can sort of look at the Saudi Derby in buyer terms at about a 100 or a 101. And you can look at the UAE Derby at about a 96. Okay, the UAE Derby was run 20 buyer points slower than the Dubai World Cup. So 116.96 is a really good line on those two races. And he ran a 96, Forever Young, despite going 4 wide on both turns. So you can boost that 96 probably by 5 or 6 points if he gets a better trip in the Kentucky Derby. For whatever reason, I don't really understand it, but the connections of Forever Young seem to be absolutely obsessed with getting him out of kickback to the point that they put that hood on him. They weren't blinkers. They didn't have a cup. They put a hood on him for the UAE Derby, according to the trainer, to soften the blow of the kickback. Yet his eyes were still exposed. That's the part that bothers horses the most. I guess maybe they didn't think he would like kickback on his cheeks or his forehead or something. I don't really understand it. But if you go back and you watch Forever Young's all his races, a couple of those races, he took a lot of kickback and he was able to win anyway. So I don't really understand what the obsession with that is. But if they try to get him outside and keep him out of kickback in the Kentucky Derby, he's got zero chance. Unless he's just sitting right there second or third outside of two other horses and he's close up and he's not behind horses at all and he gets the right kind of draw and all that, and he can stay out of kickback that way. But if they steer him to the outside to get him out of kickback in the Derby, how wide is he going to be? And that bothers me, too. That bothers me, too, about the horse going forward.
Was he wearing a hood or was he wearing a set of pacifiers?
What is that?
You know, the pacifiers, they kind of look like a hood, but they have screens to stop the dirt hitting the horse in the face, almost like a fly. If you know what a fly looks like, yeah, with the eyes like that, that's called a pacifier, and it's to negate the kickback. I wondered if
it was my impression that it was just a hood. Okay, and there was no kind of eyewear whatsoever, but I wouldn't, yeah, you know.
Because the pacifiers come without the blinker things. It's just basically a mesh, a wire mesh to stop the kickback. And I thought he ran a lot better. One thing that he did do was switch leads on cue. You could see that they've been practicing. The jockey shifted his weight and yanked him over, and he did it the first time. So I think he's definitely progressed and moved forward. Since the Saudi Derby, the UAE Derby was a much, much better race for Forever Young. Is he good enough to win the Kentucky Derby? Probably not. But he's definitely a progressive sort of horse who is getting a little bit better. As far as Derma Sotogaki, I gather he hit his head in the starting gate prior to the race that kind of threw him off, like pretty badly by all accounts, Randy.
And of course, what we're going to hear ad nauseum between now and when the starting gate opens for the Kentucky Derby is, you know, can Forever Young have a really tough race in the Saudi Derby and then again a really tough race going wide on both turns in the UAE Derby and then ship Transatlantic and be able to hold his form? UAE Derby winners are 0 for 19 in the Kentucky Derby, never mind the fact that the average odds have been 23-1. You're going to hear a lot about that, people saying that he has no chance in the Kentucky Derby, but I think he does if things go right and they don't try to steer him out 6 or 7 wide to get him out of kickback.
And one thing about the Japanese horses, too, is they're fitter than most of us. The way they train them for hours. It's just magnificent to watch them train because we've had a few out here at Santa Anita and we're like, wow, they're going around again. How many times are they going around? And then they'll stop and then they'll go around again. So stamina is not a problem for the Japanese horses. And Yoshito Hagagi, you know, his father died the morning of the race. So he dedicated the UAE Derby to his dad, which I thought was really cool. And he's just such a great man. He wears his different hat every time you see him at the races. He's always got a smile on his face. So I'm welcoming him to the Derby. I think it'll be great.
TD and Riders Room is brought to you by the PHBA, the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. An overflow field is expected for the Wood Memorial on Saturday and an aqueduct card that will also be overflowing with talented Pennsylvania breds. Withers Stakes winner Uncle Heavy is a Wood Memorial contender for trainer Butch Reed. Carmelina is expected to run in the Gazelle for 3-year-old fillies. She was second in the Busher Stakes in her last start and in the 7-furlong Bay Shore for 3-year-olds. Maximus Meridius expected to run. He most recently was 4th in the 1-mile Gotham Stakes. For more information on breeding and racing your very own Pennsylvania breds, such as Uncle Heavy, Carmelina, and Maximus Meridius, you can go to www.pabred.com.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late, it's a photo finish!
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Spitestown. Munning. Echo Town.
It's Echo Town for Joe Talamo and Echo Town raced away.
And Echo Town is drawing away in the stretch. Echo Town wins the Allen Jerkin Stakes.
A sire line so prolific, it repeats itself. Echo Town.
It's time for the Coolmore Stallion of the Week, and this week that is Echo Town. Echo Town's first two-year-olds went on sale 2 weeks ago at OBS March. From a $5,000 stud fee, they sold for fees of $130,000, $120,000, and $110,000. And why not? He was a grade one winning sprinter by Spitestown and a half-brother to the champion two-year-old filly, Echo Zulu. Zoe, you saw the Echo Towns at OBS. What'd you think of them?
I like them. In fact, I'm going to like do a little plug right now because the team of TMZ, Tesha, Marette Farrell, and myself, we call ourselves TMZ, or except at the end of the sale, which is too much Zoe. We bought one at the end of the Keeneland sale for $17,000. He's in training down in Ocala with Nellie Breeden, a.k.a. Gladwell, on their farm. And we're actually pointing him to the OBS June sale. I think they're going to need a little bit more time, which is why he's going to go to the June sale. But I've really liked what I've seen from them. They're good movers. They look like they can go two turns. They're not actual sprinter. They don't have a sprinter type body, or at least ours doesn't. So I'm really excited. And, you know, he's a half to champion. He's a grade one winner. His half sister is a multiple grade one winner. She should have won the Breeders' Cup sprint. And I'm very, very excited for ours going to OBS June. There's a quick plug for you.
Echo Town stands at Coolmore for just $5,000.
TDN Writers Room brought to you by The Green Group, a tax accounting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and designed to save you money on your taxes.
Welcome in now, The Green Group guest of the week, and is Dr. Stuart Brown. His title is Vice President of Equine Safety at Keeneland. Equine safety, always a very important topic, and it's great to talk with Dr. Brown to talk about what they're doing not only at Keeneland, but what we're doing around the country to make this game as safe as possible for our horses. Dr. Brown, you started in June of 2020. It's about 4 years later. Obviously, the game has gotten safer in that period of time. Would you agree? And what has been the main reason?
Thank you, Bill. I think, I think the game has gotten safer. I think that what we recognize today, especially through a lot of the collaboration that we have amongst a lot of different groups, not just the racing associations, but, you know, within a regulatory veterinary community, but working with the horsemen and the attending veterinarians, you know, there's been a really intensive drive toward these collaborations and the impact that we can have on equine safety. I think here, you know, we talk a lot about that, you know, when we keep the four-legged mane and a tail entity at the center of everything we do, our focus can kind of really be well aligned around all these efforts that kind of translate into the safety proposition that we're looking to leverage, you know, on behalf of making a difference for the horse.
Well, Stuart, it's great to talk to you. I can see you're in your office there at Keeneland. And yes, just explain to us a little bit what Keeneland is doing, because I know we're going through a similar thing out here in Southern California with the vets and the regulatory vets. And I can see there's a giant screen behind you.
Yeah.
Explain to us what that's for, because I think we have one at Santa Anita as well.
Yeah, thanks, Zoe. I think, you know, and folks like yourself would probably be familiar with, you know, from, you know, my colleagues like Dr. Blaya that are in California and Dr. Carpenter, as well as Dr. Benson and all the different folks there. I think what we have, you know, is this relationship that continues to sort of grow and emerge against a backdrop of all the things that we're trying to do on behalf of the horse. And so the vet cam system here that we have at Keeneland is one that we're really proud of here that sort of helped us to leverage technology. And here, it's really an example of an tremendous collaboration. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be joined by Dr. George Mundy, that's part of our team as well here, who had worked with in the regulatory space for some 30 years, as well as you kind of got the backdrop of my 30 some odd years of private practice experience and bringing and marrying up those two worlds together. And from Dr. Mundy's perspective, he also has had the benefit of working with NBC Productions during the Breeders' Cup telecast and what they've kind of done, you know, in terms of run-ups. And out of that was kind of born of this, you know, how do you get a lens into the world of what the horses are doing on track, you know, irregardless of where you find them and whatever time of the day. And so in 2020, when starting in this effort, I began to have some conversations with our broadcast here at Keeneland about what they do with the regular broadcast cameras in the morning when they're not using them for the actual telecast. And so, you know, Zoe, you in particular have, you know, an appreciation for, you know, those things are glimpses and stuff that you all use to sort of highlight for spectators and patrons of the sport, the things that are happening on any given race day to help educate, you know, the public about, you know, what's going on or as you're coming up to race day. And you capture really unique observations about a horse in a lot of those perspectives. Here, you know, I began to ask the question of our broadcast team, what do you do with those cameras in the mornings? And, you know, most of the time they were up and they're running, but really nobody was looking at them. So we talked about where we could position a lot of those around the racetrack and then potentially use the opportunity to sort of look into the world that the horse is experiencing. They're especially loaded with weight, so you're really seeing them in the environment. And we spend a lot of time in the shed row looking at horses and doing really good workups on horses to make sure that they're safe, you know, coming out, you know, from the barn area to the racetrack. But oftentimes we don't really get a great chance to have this glimpse and look at how the horse is doing loaded with weight with the rider. And so what we began to do and what was born out of those experiences is we began to sort of recognize that we have a lot of events that go on here at Keeneland, even in the mornings. And sometimes the broadcast team needs those cameras for other things. They're entertaining a live audience or they're doing things, you know, at different times of the day. So then it became important for us to actually develop this vet camera system that's sort of wholly owned by our equine safety team here. We have remote workstations around the racetrack with 18 cameras that cross-articulate the racetracks here, both our main track and our training track. And so we use those to, you know, leverage our ability to take technology and sort of see in multiple locations, and then we can kind of build on a lot of our information about horses we want to understand. And when we do that and integrate that with the work of our clockers and our outriders and all the other people that interface with the horse, then we can see things within, you know, the aspects of when a horse is on those surfaces, so we can look back at those and actually build a study to understand how those horses are doing coming up to any individual performance.
Stuart, one of the great advancements I think the industry has made, or something that has great potential, is Stride Safe. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast. Where do things stand now with the implementation or usage of Stride Safe vis-a-vis Keeneland and all of Kentucky racing?
Yeah, I think, Bill, that's a great point, too. I think the wearable technologies, you know, hold a whole lot of promise for us. I think, you know, one of the things that I talked to a lot of people about when I came here and making the observations, I'm sort of struggled to get away from the rail and being at the racing office gap. I watch horses moving, you know, in a backdrop constantly. So, you know, one of the things that I appreciate there is that from a subjective standpoint, you're seeing the quality of movement of horses on the racetrack. And so one of the great tools that we're now beginning to develop and have available, these wearable technologies, and Stride Safe represents that aspect of that, where we're taking objective data that we collect from these accelerometers carried in the saddle tail on those horses during a race. And we're looking at, you know, 9 different planes of movement of that horse, taking 2,000 to 4,000, you know, measurements every second, you know, that the horse is moving, and then drawing a fingerprint of how that horse moves. It's kind of the analogy of the black box that, you know, people are familiar with from an FAA standpoint, you know, are those things that we're capturing in that space, so that we can kind of really look and take those subjective observations and then translate them into objective data that we can use to analyze the quality of movement of the horse. And in Kentucky, what's happened is both, you know, we have multiple really, I think, rewarding collaborations that we share with Churchill Downs and Kentucky Downs and other racing associations working here, to where everyone is sort of invested in this experience of using Stride Safe and these wearable technologies, to where we've been building sort of across the jurisdiction of horses that we share amongst ourselves, a lot of really good information through a calendar year of those horses moving from our various racing associations competing on different surfaces, and then kind of have this, you know, risk assessment model for how those horses are doing or how they might change throughout the year. And if you think about that in terms of what we kind of have going on in Kentucky, the experience that horses will have from our, you know, dirt surface here to the one that happens at Churchill Downs or their turf surface coming off of what has happened through a synthetic experience that they had at Turfway Park through the winter here has kind of been really an interesting opportunity for us to learn more and then to apply more about what we've gained from access into that wearable technology space through StrideSafe. And, you know, to give David Lambert and Greg Packman, you know, a lot of credit, they do a great job of engaging with us in the racing association space and working with our horsemen and then the attending veterinarians, because one of the things that I've talked to them about is they're creating a toolkit, right, for the horsemen and for their attending veterinarians who are really responsible for the welfare of that racehorse to make sure that they're doing their utmost best every time a horse sets foot on a racetrack.
So one quick follow-up question to that. Is it now mandatory? Are all horses wearing it at Keeneland when they race and when they work?
No, they're all wearing it when they race. So, race, you know, currently okay. the application is for every runner that competes at our meet will be carrying one of those sensors in the saddle towel. So that the focus has been, you know, on using the technology there and then providing that as the tool that then can kind of give direct feedback to the trainers and their veterinarians.
Wow, that's really cool. All right, so that's pretty much the horses. What can you tell me about the Graham test? Because when I first saw this, in fact, a friend of mine, Jane Buchanan, said, you should ask Stuart about the Graham test. I'm like, what is the Graham test? She's like, well, it's about James Graham. I'm like, what? See if you can understand him at 5 a.m?
But again, yeah, that's right. He walked past me, you know, yesterday morning, and we were sort of talking about, here he comes up the driveway, you know, with the Graham test. Now, you know, life's all about relationships, right? And so one of the ones when I first came here that was a kind of a below the surface that I didn't really realize that I had was there was, you know, the UK Sports Medical Research Institute, the SMRI here in Kentucky, has been, you know, an opportunity to sort of work on behalf of the advocacy of the wellness and the safety of riders here. And the UK SMRI group here has spent some time, you know, when Carl Maticola was here and then Scott Leppard and then, you know, that team of folks, you know, has continued to sort of work here. And there was an opportunity to do some engagement around that, about that activity that they kind of wanted to do. And so they have come out and taken their team and come out during our race day and spent time with us, you know, to try to sort of learn about how the jockeys were doing. And the proposition there is that everything we're doing for jockey safety and wellness translates into the safety of our equine athletes. And so things like assessing how riders are doing throughout their race day, Kimberly Tumlin and her team came out, brought basically the aspects of what they do in the laboratory, you know, down there on campus at the University of Kentucky, in conjunction with the UK health care professionals that come here and help us on race day, and then took those metrics and then were able to look at our riders and see, you know, from race 1 to race 11, how those riders are doing. And so they've had really good engagement across the rider colony here about participating in those activities. And so they come into looking at balance and reaction time and, you know, all those aspects that sort of translate into safety. And so it's been really interesting to kind of look at kind of the feedback that they've been able to get back from the riders and then kind of the types of things they've looked at. They've gotten a couple of really exciting grants funded. And then they've come out of this with this Graham test that they're using. So it's a set of metrics that they're using around what James and some of his other colleagues have done in the riding colony here to work with the SMRI group to come up with, you know, a really serious metric that they can use to sort of evaluate how riders are doing throughout the race car.
As in concussion, or how are they doing? Can you just expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, not unlike what we kind of have, you know, in terms of the accelerometer data that we capture with StrideSafe. There is accelerometer data that they're capturing on the riders on a bungee ball, you know, and so they're kind of taking those riders and they're sort of crouching in a position like they would be riding and then looking at their balance, you know, on those things throughout the day and then testing their visual acuity and then the reaction times. And so through those, they're sort of taking those measurements on those riders actually in between races and throughout the race day. And then you'd be able to use those in a metric and then to have developed this Graham test that's come out of those efforts.
I'm just more intrigued about the Graham test. Can you fail a Graham test? You get taken off balance?
That's a good question. And I think it's kind of like what we've talked about a little bit on, you know, what we're doing with StrideSafe. I think we're building information and learning more and more about things. So, you know, what I sort of hope will happen, and kind of I talked to Dr. Pete Hester, who kind of, you know, that's sort of one of Dr. Hester's focus in terms of rider safety and health, you know, that he does on behalf of HISA. And so he's been here, been able to kind of have some opportunity to sort of look into that world a little bit and then talk about, you know, how those things can be used against, you know, things like the head check system and other things like that, so that we can apply potentially those things that we're measuring about, you know, whether we would know whether or not it's safe for a rider, you know, in terms of continuing to compete throughout the day. I think when you think too on the aspect of journeyman riders, you know, people who are flying in from across the country that come in to ride for maybe 2 or 3 mounts a day, you know, what is the effect of fatigue, you know, on those riders? What's the effect of travel and the jet lag effect and all those other things that can kind of, you know, factor into, you know, how a rider, you know, wellness translates into safety.
So, Stuart, I wanted to bring you back to another subject matter similar to this. We've had the synthetic surface era, which Keeneland was part of. The sport got away from it. And now it looks like the sport is kind of, you know, rethinking the whole idea of synthetic surfaces. They put one in at Gulfstream. The new Belmont is going to have one. What is your personal feelings on synthetic surfaces, and what role will they play in the future of racing?
Yeah, I think they're, you know, I think that experience has been really interesting. And I think, you know, we've learned a lot from Tim Parkin's data in the equine injury database about, you know, looking at the impact that those various surfaces had in synthetics. While some of our experiences have maybe been a little more limited in North American racing in the last, you know, 10 years than they were the previous 10, we kind of continue to sort of take places like Turfway Park, Presque Isle, you know, Golden Gate, you know, and then now what we're going to be able to kind of experience in terms of Gulfstream Park's experience and look at a lot of that data across a large number of starts. But one of the things that I find really interesting has been, you know, especially the racetrack here at Keeneland, has been these repurposed dirt tracks. The, you know, one of the great strengths, I think, for, you know, and I learned in coming here and spending time with our track maintenance team, and, you know, Jim Pendergast and Alfredo Loriana do this incredible job of managing the surface here. But when I spent time the first year I was here and spent, you know, a week or more, you know, riding around with them and continue to talk about the metrics that they use, they, you know, drilled into me that the three most important aspects about managing a dirt track are water, water, and water. And so they work really hard, strive really hard to maintain the consistency of, you know, the components of this 19,000 tons of sand, clay, and silt that make up this racetrack, and how they keep that really tight band of 18 to 21% moisture content with a consistent cushion, you know, across that. And so you can tell by the metrics that I sort of tease out of my conversations with them that I see that as the industry strives to sort of have consistency for the musculoskeletal system that the horse experiences when they train and they race and how they remodel, you know, over those surfaces, that becomes important for us to share those kinds of experiences and those metrics. And one of the things that I think's, you know, been a benefit here is with the vertical drainage system that still exists under this dirt surface. So you have the benefit of inclement weather and then, you know, the management of maintaining that consistent water content, you know, within the racetrack surface is something that becomes very predictable because you have both the horizontal and vertical drainage systems. And so putting a real focus, working, you know, with Mick Peterson's team, you know, that comes out and does a lot of evaluations on our surface, I still, you know, believe that these dirt surfaces repurposed like they've been from the synthetic era approach what we see or recognize mm-hmm. that are done with the synthetics in terms of, you know, those metrics we look at in terms of injury rate.
Wow. I've got one more question for you. And you're at Keeneland day in, day out. How's that new paddock looking?
Well, right now it's a work in progress, Zoe, but it's going to be phenomenal. I think it's going to be a really unique experience for a lot of the patrons, but also for the horses and the horsemen. I think when it's completed, it's going to be, you know, a real, you know, it's one of the things that's always been great about racing here, you know, is the intimate nature of people's, you know, experience with, you know, coming to the races at Keeneland and what they can experience about the saddling and the experience in the paddock under the trees and how close. And, you know, I get to work with Gatewood Bell and Ben Huffman and a lot of those folks to talk about what are all the aspects of that that you can bring together, keeping the emphasis and the mindset over equine safety there that sort of continues to sort of cultivate, I think, those kinds of experiences to build on our fan base. Because I think when this paddock is completed and it's finished, there are going to be so many things that are going to be resources there, not only for the people and the patrons that come, but really for the horses and the horsemen that are here. You know, when you think about aspects of, you know, the first two-year-old races in North America that get run and all those things, we want all those experiences to be, you know, really focused on making sure they're beneficial to the horse. You know, the impact that we can have in planning on making sure that those are favorable experiences for the horse and help them build on their careers in racing, you know, are a part of, you know, where we see opportunity we don't shy away from.
Well, an exciting time in racing with Keeneland opening up the spring meet on Friday. Dr. Stuart Brown, thanks so much for joining us, being the Green Group Guest of the Week. Let's have a great meet at Keeneland and let's have a safe meet.
Well, thank you all. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Thank you so much.
As our Green Group Guest of the Week, Dr. Stuart Brown will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation with Lynn Green and partners at the Green Group. For more information on how the Green Group can help you, you can visit www.greenco.com.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonderwheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
In this week's edition of First Things First, we re-rack the tape and we go back in time as I caught up with owner breeder John Sondricker after the Chosen Bronze emphatic win in the San Carlos. Here with one of my favorite guys, John Sondricker, a big fan of the TDN. The San Carlos winner, the Chosen Bronze. How are you feeling right now, John?
I'm feeling great. When you win, you feel great.
He's a homebred for you guys.
Homebred, little skinny thing. I thought he wouldn't even run till he was late threes, you know. He's just got so much heart. He just does it.
He's now won 16 races. Have you ever had a horse that's won 16 races?
Not even close. Maybe half that. Maybe half.
Cowbred Horse of the Year, twice. Cowbred Sprinter of the Year. Like, he's going to be the best horse you've ever had.
Oh, no question. Yeah, it's a dream come true. I mean, everybody would want to win the Derby or something like that, but I never had those kind of expectations, and I never had these kind of expectations. You know, when they exceed your expectations. Somebody told me I would have a horse 20 years ago that won 16 out of 20. I would have bet him $1 million or more if I had it. You know, it just doesn't sound right, does it?
Your trainer describes him as a cool dude.
Hey, he walks around. I've walked him around the backside there, and nothing bothers him. Tractor goes by, you know, or fillies go by, nothing bothers that gelding. You know, he's just like, man, everything's cool here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do want to remind you that Santa Anita will continue racing. Now, we cancelled last weekend. We will have a 4-day racing week this week, starting on Thursday with a 9-race card, 1 o'clock post, and a couple of graded stakes on the card. The Grade 3 Wiltshire and the Grade 3 American will have racing throughout the weekend, including a Super Saturday as the first racing tour continues with the Santa Anita Derby and the Santa Anita Oaks that we'll talk about in just a moment. It's going to be a fantastic weekend of racing. And on Sunday, because we postponed from last week, I'm going to go and find some Easter eggs, guys. Probably their chocolate.
Good for you, Zoe. All right, so let's take a look at what's coming up this weekend. And our team has had to do this without the past performances, and they're not out yet for the big races around the country. Of course, the three big preps for the Kentucky Derby, the Bluegrass, Santa Anita Derby, and Wood Memorial. Of the three, I think there's little doubt that the Bluegrass is the most important. And I think what it's going to answer is who's going to be the second choice in the Derby, as long as Sierra Leone and Dornach, one of the other, wins that. And they're having this rematch. They had that great race in the Remsen Stakes where Dornach won by a nose. He was beaten. He came back and win. But I thought that day, Randy, you talked about a bias at Oaklawn when Mystic Dan won. I thought there was a bias in New York that day. And I think that Dornach benefited from being on the rail. But they're two really nice horses. They've got to prove that they're good enough to beat Fierceness in the Kentucky Derby, but they don't have to worry about Bob Baffert. So one of the other, Sierra Leone and Dornach, is going to be a big deal in the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to pick Sierra Leone for the reason why I mentioned. I thought he did not get the best of trips in that Remsen. See the rematch now, and I'll go with Dornach. I'll go with Sierra Leone. What am I saying?
All right. I'll throw a third in there, Just a Touch, trained by Brad Cox. I think it's a big three in this race. Mm-hmm. I think Just a Touch has, in my opinion, has as good a chance to win the Bluegrass as Dornach does. Others that are expected to run, the 1-2 finishers in the Battaglia, Encino, and Epic Ride, Good Money, narrowly beaten in the Tampa Bay Derby. I think Calumet wants to run in this spot with Chad Brown, Kenny McPeak and Lat Long. Lucas is coming back with his horse that ran in the, I guess it was the Jeff Ruby. And then Todd Pletcher expected to run Tuscan Sky, who's a perfect 2-for-2. Good point. It's probably the deepest field of 3-year-olds that we've seen, just because of the top three, really. I'll give Sierra Leone the advantage. He was flattered, I thought, by catching Freedom's win in the Louisiana Derby. I'm not entirely convinced. The way Sierra Leone drops way back out of it in his races, that's not going to come back and haunt him. I said it right after the race, and I'll say it again. I know he only had 4 published workouts. I know that the Fountain of Youth was a means to an end. I respect trainer Danny Gargan. I did not like Dornach's race in the Fountain of Youth. The horses that were behind him, Le Don Bro and Frankie's Empire, were horses that if they made the Kentucky Derby were going to be 100-1. And it turns out they both ran poorly in the Florida Derby, and they won't make the Kentucky Derby. I thought even under the circumstances that Dornach should have won the Fountain of Youth more impressively than he did. I think Just a Touch will beat him in the Bluegrass Stakes. And I've been badly wrong in situations like this before. So we'll let him. I'll let him beat me in there, Zoe.
I like Sierra Leone in there. We'll have a little bit more info on Dornach in just a moment, because he is our work of the week for XBTV. So you can have a good look at his work there. But it's Sierra Leone for me. But that's Saturday. I'm actually more intrigued with Friday with the Ashland, because my favorite filly is coming back in there, the one that's going to give Ways and Means a run for her money in the Kentucky Oaks. And that is Just FYI. She's got to run against Jody's Pride. Look at Randy. I am so looking forward to seeing her run. I can't tell you. Randy, you're not looking forward to seeing Just FYI?
She's going to have to run a lot faster than she's ever run in her life.
I'm telling you, she's going to park.
You see, we see this all the time, right? You see horses like Just FYI and Jody's Pride who win big races, in this case, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. They ran 1-2. And Just FYI wins the Frizette, and Jody's Pride comes back and wins the Busher. And when you see horses like this that have credentials, but they run slow, 9 times out of 10, they come back and they run back to those slow numbers. So we'll see if that happens here. The 3-year-old filly division has suddenly gotten a lot tougher. Tarifa jumps up and runs really fast over another Brad Cox filly who's talented in the Fairgrounds Oaks. The Fantasy, Torpedo Anna, they run fast. The Gulfstream Park Oaks, the top two in there, including Ways and Means with all the trouble she had, they run fast. I mean, they're all running buyer speed figures in the 90s. Just FYI, is going to have to really step up her game. But I know there's more to horse racing than numbers.
Can we have
and
a Zoe,
I know you've watched Just FYI, and you've watched her train, and you like her physical, and you like her trainer, Bill Mott, obviously. And you go a lot deeper with Just FYI than I do. I will give you that.
Can we have I sense a side bet here between you two. How about that?
Yeah. What do you want to wager, Randy?
Let's go Impel. Okay. Versus Just FYI, horse for horse.
All right. Okay. And for what are we staking here, though?
What do you think, Zoe? What should we stake?
Bragging rights for one. And a favorite bottle of whatever you want to drink.
Okay. There you go. All right. Yeah. I'm the judge of this. The bet is on. The Ashland is just incredible. I mean, some of the horses you didn't even mention, Randy. Candied, third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Haven't seen her since that race. Leslie's Rose cost $1.15 million. Impel, who was the horse with the big figures. Jody's Pride figures to be a terrific edition of the Ashland. And I don't know if they're going to be able to beat out Tarifa to be the favorite, but maybe Impel would be the favorite, I think, if she wins this. What do you think, Randy? If Impel wins this, is she the favorite in the Kentucky Oaks over her stablemate?
I would, if she wins the Ashland against this field, I think she probably will be the favorite in the Kentucky Oaks over Tarifa, but it'll be close. What's interesting in here from a handicapping perspective, okay? Now, Candied comes from the clouds. Standout Sensations got blinkers on. She wants to stalk up close, I think. Leslie's Rose wants to stalk up close. Alina's Forte wants a good close stalking spot. So does Just FYI. So does Impel. And so does Jody's Pride. Something's got to give. They can't all be in the same spot. Space and time, physics will not allow that. So some of these horses are going to get shuffled back farther than they would like to be just based on the way they break and the way the race shapes up going into the first turn. So, you know, that's going to be very interesting to see who's the odd filly out, so to speak, among the leading contenders.
And one last, going back to the Bluegrass, as good a race as this is this year, and it seems to be every single year, last Bluegrass winner win the Kentucky Derby, Strike the Gold in 1991. Someone brought that to my attention. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I would have thought five Bluegrass winners have won the Derby since then, but it's because some really good horses have won this race. Okay, Santa Anita Derby on Saturday. Bob Baffert has won 9 times, and it's no surprise that he's got the horses to beat. He's going to run Imagination and Maimon. Maybe Wind Me Up. Maybe Winstock will know, of course, when the entries come out. But Zoe, this looks like it's Baffert's race to lose. And then we'll look forward to seeing his horses in the Preakness, I suppose.
Yeah, Maimon and Imagination are a strong card for Baffert to hold. You know, there's an interesting horse in there in Stronghold for Phil D'Amato. He didn't run a very high number, but he's a pretty good horse. He took down the Sunland Derby. I'll be interested to see how he runs in here, but I do believe it is Maimon's race to lose in here. I really do.
And as of 15 minutes ago or so through texting, those are the only two right now that Baffert is planning on entering, Maimon and Imagination. So Wind Me Up, Winstock, Coach Crime. It looks like Bob's going to be looking for other spots for them. And they're, I mean, Maimon and Imagination are obviously solid choices to be the exacta in here with 100 points and 50 points that will then be vacated along with all the other points that the Baffert horses have been vacated from over the last few years. Stronghold, Tapelo, I think, is an interesting horse as well. He was second in the El Camino Real Derby behind Endlessly. Obviously, that's on synthetic. He'd had good dirt form before that. And I encourage handicappers to go back and watch the video of the El Camino Real Derby and the turn of foot that this horse showed when he took the lead at the top of the stretch, or when he actually kicked away at the top of the stretch and opened up 2 or 3 lengths on the field in a flash. And you thought, boy, this horse is gone. And then Endlessly managed to run him down. And then we saw what Endlessly came back and did in the Jeff Ruby. So I think Tapelo is in there with a shot to hit the board as well behind Maimon and Imagination. We're going to be doing this race on CNBC beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday.
All right, so let's turn our attention to New York, where the Wood Memorial is part of the card. Again, a race that has just not produced Kentucky Derby winners. No horse that won the Wood Memorial has come back to win the Kentucky Derby since Fusiachi Pegasus in 2000. Having said that, though, Funny Side did run in the Wood Memorial, was second or third, but came back, of course, to win the Kentucky Derby. There's many as 17 horses possibly going to enter the race. Means a couple will be excluded. I believe they can only run 14. And deterministic, and besides him, I don't see anybody to really get excited about. But, you know, he proved a lot in the Gotham, winning that race off a layoff and just one maiden run back at Saratoga. I assume he'll be a pretty solid favorite in there. And will he break the Wood Memorial jinx? Well, if he wins, we'll find out. But Randy, outside of him, I mean, who else in here would you, you know, say is like, oh, I really want to see blank run in the Wood Memorial because I'm interested in them in the Kentucky Derby?
I love this little horse, El Grande O, who's such a hard trying horse. But as far as a, you know, Kentucky Derby type horse, I think that's probably a bridge too far. You know, Uncle Heavy won the Withers, the Pennsylvania bred, but it's hard to get excited. I totally agree with you. BU ran a big number when he broke his maiden last time out of Gulfstream Park. But, you know, before that, he had been kind of disappointing. Really, the only horse that I'm that interested in seeing run, I agree, would be Deterministic, who's a perfect 2-for-2. Yes, in 2003, Funny Side was second to Empire Maker, narrowly beaten second, although Empire Maker was under a double Nelson in that race as they came to the wire from Jerry Bailey. And that's the last horse that has even run in the Wood Memorial that came back to win the Kentucky Derby. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. I'll have them on Kentucky Derby weekend. But since 2003, I want to say it's something like, you know, 0-for-80 something horses coming out of the Wood Memorial running in the Kentucky Derby. It's a high number.
Yeah. Wow. That's a big number. It's deterministic for me. When you take a look at them in the paddock, he'll look like a man against boys in the paddock. He's just a big, beautiful looking horse. Society Man, I mean, it's basically deterministic and a lot of horses that have just broken their maidens in there. It's going to be a question of who gets a good trip. We've already seen that Deterministic doesn't need a good trip. He makes his own trip wherever he sits in the race. He can overcome adversity. So we'll see if he wins it. I think he does. He's the most obvious horse. But, he, in big fields, anything can happen. We've seen this time and time again. That 14 runners is a lot. The TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by XBeed TV. Now, Randy, pay attention and don't talk this time. The XBeed TV Work of the Week is Dornock, seen working here 4 furlongs in 47 and 1 for our recent Writers' Room podcast guest, Danny Gargan. Now, his rider is in the black sleeves on the outside. That's Ringy Dingy, a filly on the inside. I believe she's a half to Dialed In. Dornock, the most recent winner of the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth, will be heading to Saturday's Bluegrass at Keeneland. You can see him square up against the other horse. He's not the most flashiest workhorse in the morning or the afternoon, but he gets things done, and we look forward to seeing him in Saturday's Bluegrass.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TDN Writers Room is also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds, as West Point is gearing up for OBS April, the two-year-old sale. They had a nice distraction Saturday on the Florida Derby undercard. How about a Grade 2 winning distraction? That would be the six-year-old gelding Cortez, who got up just in time to win the Pan American under Joel Rosario. It was Cortez's first race for West Point and Partners and his first race in the U.S. Cortez was formerly owned by the Wertheimer brothers and trained by Andre Fobb. He was entered last fall in the Arcana Arc sale. Trainer Christophe Clement identified him as a U.S. racing prospect. And just like that, the West Point Partners were vaulted into the world of instant camaraderie. If it sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can learn more at www.westpointtb.com.
Let's wrap on this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and Zoe Cadman, our Green Group guests of the week, Dr. Stuart Brown from Keeneland, and Katie Petruniak, Anthony LaRocca. They're our producers, and our editors, Leah LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson. Should be a great weekend of racing. We'll be back next week to fill you in on everything that happened. Lucy. Hi, Lucy.
I was going to pick her up and bring her just like Zoe did with Doodle, but her eyes are closed. It would be dog abuse, I think, if I went back.
He's out.
Yes.
That's the count.
So the four of us will be back next week. Randy, Zoe, myself, and Lucy. We'll see you next week.